The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
You're listening to Money FM 89.3, and throughout this week we've been talking to a number of investment firms about their outlook for the second half, and there seems to be a pervasive theme across the board, and that is of careful optimism as we head into the last 6 months of the year. Well, is this the same outlook that Credit Suisse might have for markets moving forward? Well, today on Money FM 89.3, we do have with us on the line Mr. Suresh Tantia. He's the Senior Investment Strategist for the Asia-Pacific region at Credit Suisse. And by the way, Credit Suisse just earlier this morning outlined their second half outlook for markets. And he's here to share with us some of the key takeaways from what Credit Suisse is tracking and where Credit Suisse might be seeing opportunities and possible risks. Mr. Tantia, thank you so much for joining us today. Glad to hear you and your loved ones are still safe and in good health during these uncertain times. And welcome to the show. Good afternoon and happy Thursday, sir.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me on the show.
All right. So, Suresh, let me start off by giving you the floor and setting up the table for you. Can you lay out for our listeners Credit Suisse's overall second half market outlook? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it cautious? And perhaps even more importantly, why?
So in the second half, we are cautiously optimistic on markets because we think the global economy is still recovering and central banks are still going to be accommodative in their policy. So in this kind of environment, you still want to be in markets depending on your risk appetite. At the asset class level, we prefer equities because that's where you get the best return on your investment, given that we are still in a recovery phase. Beyond equities, I think bonds could struggle a bit because yields are still lower. And as central bank Fed, especially in the US, has started to talk about tapering, yields might go up in the next 6 to 12 months. Mm-hmm. So within the asset class, I think equities is a space to be, especially the cyclical sectors and markets like European markets and in case of Asia, South Korea and Thailand, which should outperform the rest of the world.
All right. So as you correctly pointed out, Mr. Tantia, a while ago, we are heading into the second half with central banks like the Federal Reserve assessing a potential tapering of stimulus. And of course, this could actually influence or potentially influence rate movements and thus affect the asset classes like bonds and even stocks. There's been talk of a possible correction, actually, because stocks are actually at a record high. How does the Fed's recent positioning influence this outlook, this cautious outlook, cautiously optimistic outlook, that is, from Credit Suisse? And just how careful should people move if you still think that equities are the way to go?
I think the recent Fed statements has certainly added a new angle to the analysis, one everybody has been waiting for, but it hasn't affected our positioning. So in the equity market, as I mentioned, we still prefer cyclical markets because they should benefit from strong economic recovery. One point to keep in mind is that as Fed taper their QE program sometime next year, it's quite likely that bonds are going to go higher. And that's why we are negative on government bonds. Even in the credit space also, one needs to be very selective because spreads are very tight and treasury yields are going to go higher. So for income-oriented investors, for bond investors, the only space I think which makes sense right now is the Asian high-yield bonds and Asian investment grade bonds, which still offer you decent yield pickup compared to treasury yields.
In fact, Suresh, I noted earlier on at the Outlook also that it was actually pointed out this yield differential between Chinese bonds and bonds outside. And I do want to take this opportunity to ask you about Credit Suisse's over-outlook for Chinese markets across asset classes. classes. Look, the opening up in mainland China's marketplace could usher in huge inflows also from investors. But there's a sense also that regulators are trying to put a lid on everything from iron ore prices to fintech largesse and even cryptos. Can you talk to us about Credit Suisse's stance in China and how they're balancing this opportunities in terms of the growth potential in China against some of these tighter regulatory positionings or messaging that we've heard from folks out in Beijing?
Yeah, so coming into the year, we were very bullish on Chinese equities, but we closed that view sometime in March. And now going forward, I think the equity market in China is going to be more range-bound because the economic momentum is slowing down. You look at the latest PMI numbers, which suggest that the new order index is at 12-month low. So the growth momentum is slowing down. And as you mentioned, the regulatory oversight from tech sector to education sector to cryptos and the commodity space has only been increasing. So that is also going to weigh on investor sentiments. So the equity space, I think, could be more range-bound in China, but the opportunity lies in the fixed income space because yields are still very high. So, for example, if you look at the government bonds in China, they are offering you 3.2% yield compared to 1.5% in US. So we see a good yield pickup in government bonds. Similarly, the corporate credit space in China, they are giving you around 7 to 8% yield in US dollar, which you don't get anywhere else. Although there are a lot of risk, given the recent news flow about few companies, but I think that a lot of that is already the price. So if you simply buy and hold those corporate bonds in China, I think one should be able to make high single-digit return in those bonds.
We're listening to Mr. Suresh Tantia, the Senior Investment Strategist for the Asia-Pacific region at Credit Suisse here on Money FM 89.3, and asking him about Credit Suisse's overall outlook for the second half in terms of where markets might be heading. And I want to stay in the Chinese bonds there for just a little bit, Mr. Tantia, because you did touch on opportunities in the Chinese fixed income space. But as you mentioned, there are a handful of these spooks and shocks that we've seen from the likes of, say, Huarong and Evergrande recently. If you were to advise an investor who wanted to go into Chinese fixed income, as you folks have advised also, how might you advise them to, in terms of managing or in avoiding potential risks, like, say, investing in a Huarong or, say, an Evergrande, if these bonds are deemed risky? How would you navigate some of the potential landmines if Chinese fixed income is still the way to go?
Yeah, I think one way would be to diversify your exposure, not buy into one or single bonds, because you never know where the risk might lie. So the ideal way is to invest in the Chinese bond market, either through a fund or through an ETF, so that you can diversify your exposure. The other thing to keep in mind is that the leverage in that space should be lower because these bonds tend to be very volatile. So a lot of bond investors, they try to leverage their portfolio to generate higher returns. But in case of the Chinese bonds, I think one should manage their leverage so that portfolio doesn't become very volatile. In any case, I think if one buy into the Chinese bond story, then you can easily make a high single-digit return just because a lot of bad news is all in the price and yields are very high.
Interesting there, Suresh. So let's shift our attention now closer to shore, or to our local shores here, Mr. Tantia. And I do want to ask about Credit Suisse's Singapore outlook and where Singapore's markets fit into the second half view. Many are holding on to the comeback story that made the SCI one of the best performing indices in the world and that this could continue. Is this an outlook that Credit Suisse shares, or do you think that there might be a couple more hiccups that might slow down the rally, at least for the STI in 2021?
I think the Singapore market has already done very well. It's up close to 10% year-to-date. So going forward, I expect Singapore equities to perform in line with the global markets. The reason being valuations are not cheap anymore, so investors would be more selective. So by the middle of next year, in 12 months' time, we are expecting STI to reach around 3,300 level. And if we include dividends, that would mean close to 10% returns from current levels. Mm-hmm. But as I mentioned, I think within the market, you need to be more selective. So in Singapore, we prefer Singapore banks, which should benefit from higher bond yields. Recently, bond yields have come down, but I think once Fed tapered their balance sheet, then we should see higher bond yields in U.S., which tends to benefit Singapore banks in terms of net interest margins. So that's where I think the opportunity lies within the market.
Right. What about Singaporean bonds or government bonds, Raj? I know that there's a bit of a skeptical view on the part of Credit Suisse with regards to Singaporean government, overall government bonds. But it has been highlighted that generally the yield differential, at least for Singapore's government bonds, seem to be better than some of their counterparts in the AAA club. Does Credit Suisse have any strong views, at least, on Singaporean fixed income?
I think in terms of the government bonds, the liquidity is very low in Singapore, and the yields are also low. If the U.S. Treasury yields go up, in line with that, you could also see Singapore yields going higher. So that's why for income-oriented investors, it would be better to buy into Asian high-yield bonds, or in the equity space in Singapore, you can also look at retail REITs, REITs or hospital REITs, which have better yield compared to government bonds.
All right. And finally, Suresh, I do want to ask, are there any other currencies to watch out for in the second half of the year?
So in the FX space, I think we need to be more selective because dollar recently started to rebound. We expect dollar to be more range-bound. So look at the cyclical currencies or commodity-linked currencies, which should benefit from a strong recovery. So we like currencies like Norwegian krona, and we like Canadian dollar in the G10 FX space. In Asia, we like CNY, which should appreciate because of the strong current account surplus, and Korean won, which is also benefiting from a strong global recovery. In case of Singapore, I think Singapore dollar could also appreciate slightly in line with CNY. So we are looking at 130 level against USD in 12 months' time.
All right, Suresh Tantia, Senior Investment Strategist at, for the Asia-Pacific region at Credit Suisse. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy schedule to join us today on Money FM 89.3 and talk about Credit Suisse's outlook for the second half in terms of markets. As always, Mr. Tantia, I wish you and your loved ones continued health and safety during these uncertain times, and we look forward to next time we can have you back on the show. Happy Thursday, sir.
Thank you.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.